Thank you for joining us today for a message from the Word of God. What follows is a recording from one of our live services at Gooch Lane Church of Christ in Huntsville, Alabama. If you're ever in the area, we'd love to have you join us in person. And if you like what you hear today, you can visit us online at teachingtruth.org, where we have videos, weekly articles on biblical topics, information about our services, and more.
It's really hard to believe that Larry Vinson is now in his eighth year in Malawi. Seems like that work has not been going on that long, but when you look at the results, it's amazing. All of that beginning because a lady who was a member of this church at the time invited a total stranger to come and meet with us one night, who met Larry and they hit it off, and I won't go through all of the details, but it resulted in him making that decision to go to Malawi. This was the fifth trip that Pam and I have taken over, and so we have in that time come to really appreciate several of the people who work with Larry. Some go all the way back to the first trip, some we've met along the way. And so I want to share some of that with you tonight, talk to you a little bit about just our trip. I'm just going to go through it rather briefly, what we did. And then toward the end, I want to share with you some of the needs that are going to be experienced in the not-too-distant future there. I have done this before, so I won't belabor the point, but for those who may be newer to the congregation, just to give you an idea, this is the size of Malawi. So you can see, you can kind of take it and shove it into the state of Alabama. But to give you an idea of the difference, in Alabama currently, our population is just a little over 5 million people. In Malawi, it's over 21 million people. So we're talking about a lot of folks in a very confined area. And it's not, you would go there, it's not just people on top of each other, as you might think, but densely populated villages scattered throughout the country. And what Larry has made a point of emphasis in his work there is to go out into those villages. It's really easy, and I think this has been the case many times in the work there, for people to go to Lilongwe, which is the capital city, and Blantyre down in the south, which is kind of like their economic capital, and to spend their time there. And that's not a bad work by any means. A lot of churches in both of those places. But many out in the villages have not heard the gospel. Plus, there are a number of churches scattered throughout these villages that get very little teaching. And so Larry's made that his point. And when we've gone over, he's taken us into those villages. We have rarely gone to the same place twice in all of these trips. And it just shows you how many places there are. So this year, as we went, Hallie Hall went back with us. Last year was Hallie's first year to go. She went back very excited about going back, which made us even more comfortable taking her along. And Pam noted just the vast improvement in her teaching skills. She's good last year, but just that extra year of teaching that she's done locally, plus having a feel for what things were like there, just made her a very good asset to have on this trip. So as we got to Malawi, we joined up with several others. You're going to recognize Larry, of course, who's towering in the background there. This is Shad, who obviously did not know the picture was being snapped at the time, but he has been with Larry since the beginning. And to look at his spiritual maturity is just amazing. He was the first year we met him, but now just his concern about the work there is so good. He's just an essential part. Moses Combi has visited with us here at Gooch Lane. Many of you have met him. He has become an essential part of this work. Last year and this year both, Pam and I got to spend more time with Moses than we ever have. Both years, Shad had something come up that took him away from driving. This year, he got sick after about 2 days, and to keep from spreading that to us, he turned the driving over to Moses, and so we rode with him a lot. And he's just a very, very entertaining man to be around. Good sense of humor, good attitude, outlook on life, but also just very, very concerned about the work there. And he now does most of the organizing of even Larry's day-to-day schedule. So again, essential. This is Lazarus Ngaluwe. He is a preacher in Malawi. It's hard to believe that he's in his 60s to look at him, but has been preaching for a number of years, I think about maybe 30, 40 years. And I tell Lazarus when he's with us, he always makes me comfortable. Because if there's a question that comes up, sometimes it'll be around a cultural issue and I'll have no idea. And he'll just take it and go with it. So this group we've worked with for several years now, again, very comfortable with them. I think they're comfortable with us. And that makes for a good 2 weeks of working there. So with that said, let me just give you a brief tour of what we did. We landed in Malawi on Friday. You've got to fly to South Africa, and then you get in South Africa too late to get the plane the next day, so you spend the night and get up. So we got into Malawi about 3:30 on Friday. Saturday morning, we kind of hit the ground running at the Area 47 church. This is the one that is nearest to where Larry lives when he's in Lilongwe to his house there. And so he's had a lot of dealings with them. Moses is associated with this church. Lazarus is associated with this church as well. So they ask if I would do a marriage seminar, which I must confess to you, I was not real excited about that, but I agreed to do it, and it ended up being a very good day. We got there at 9 a.m., and there were 30 people there. And I thought, man, this is going to be easy. We'll have this knocked out. By noon, there were 300 who were there. I have never seen a clock in any house in Malawi. That kind of hit me on the last trip, and I asked Larry if he had ever seen one. He thought about it, no. So it's all about the sun there. So when it looks like it's 9 o'clock, you show up, and that might be 10. But at this meeting, there were 27 different churches represented. So Christians coming in from all over Lilongwe, plus some from the villages that would have been close but not in Lilongwe proper, they came in for this. And then we found out that there were at least visitors from three denominations present. One of those sets of visitors was Larry's landlords, who are very good people and have been so good to us when we've been there, but not Christians. They came for that. We got a very positive reception, so we pray that maybe a door is opened with them. Anyway, this lasted from about 9 a.m. to about 4:30. I preached three times during that session, and then two men from over there presented, so a total of five sermons. Then on Sunday, we went back to the morning service at Lilongwe, and that consisted of me preaching and Pam and Hallie taking the kids. And when they send the kids to class, that's it. They don't come back from class until the service is over. So they end up having an hour and a half session, 2 hours maybe, with the kids there. So that was day number one. And then on Monday, we began going into the villages. The first village we went to was Kasanga. And I'll just have to share with you, I faced some very stiff competition here. Someone withstood me to the face, as you can see there. But I just wanted to show you I did win him over, right? So there he is again. This was an extremely friendly congregation. They were very welcoming to us. They listened to every word that was spoken. And so throughout the entire time we were there, it would work out where Larry would preach, I would preach. And then there would be a division of the men and women. Larry would teach the men, Pam and Hallie would teach the women, and then we'd come back together and I would preach one more time. I think that was our plan every day as we went through. So you can see, this is the ladies' study here. Let me back up a little bit. I'll get to that here in a minute. This is the ladies' study, and this lady, Karen, I believe, right? Karen was her name, and she was just an excellent interpreter. The ladies don't always know if they're going to get a really good interpreter or not, and she was. She was with them a couple of days, very humble, enjoyed doing it, and so they were glad to have her. But you can notice there how many are present, and that's going to be one of the smaller sessions that they did. So this particular church, as we ended the day, one of the elders got up and, of course, was thanking us for coming. But we learned that this is one of the congregations that received some of the relief efforts that were made possible by many of you. I'll get to that here in a little while and talk more about it, but they were just expressing their thanks for what was done, as well as talking about what may be coming up in the future. So that was a good start to our week. Our next visit was to the Gogoti Church. This was totally outdoors. I never even saw their building, so I'm assuming it must have been pretty small, because they had us set up already outside, and by the time we got into our session, there were at least 450 people in attendance. And you can see here, they always take care of us. They put this, they'll put a shelter up that we can sit under and understand that our poor American skin can't quite take the African sun. So they'll put us under there. Again, we followed that same kind of pattern. This is the ladies' class. If you look here, I took that as Pam and Hallie are teaching. Men kind of went as far enough in the distance as possible so that there wasn't a conflict in the two teachings. But that was a good day. We found out that there were 32 non-Christian men who visited this assembly, and the way we knew that is they segregated themselves from everybody else. I was wondering why they were sitting alone, but they did. I mean, that wasn't by request or anything. They just did that. So not sure how many of the ladies were non-Christians. I'm assuming if 32 men were there who were not Christians, there were that many or more ladies who would have been there. So really good effort by this group. They were encouraged to invite people from the village in who were not Christians, and they did this. And this was a good day also because the village chief actually made the decision to become a Christian as a result of all of this. And I don't say that to highlight him by any means, but their culture is so different than ours. You know, our American Republican with the small r kind of way of looking at things is everybody's equal. In these villages, the chief exercises a great deal of power. And what he does is going to impact a lot of people. I mean, for a church to begin meeting somewhere, they got to have the chief's permission. I mean, he can deny that, and the church has no recourse. But this particular chief, of course, had been very accommodating to the church here, but also when he heard the message, became a Christian. And that likely is going to mean that others will as well as they follow his example. So we're hopeful for that work. Next day was on to the McQuitchie Church. This one started out in their building, and this is where we all began. Men, and that's just the women there, but the men and women were both in there. And somebody came and told Larry, he said, all the visitors from the village are sitting outside. And so he said, let's move outside, which everybody was happy about that. It was really crowded. And you can see there, we just kind of regrouped under the tree. And this was another of those areas where the people had really invited a lot of their fellow citizens to come in to hear the gospel preached. The ladies' class, you can see, is a packed building there with Pam teaching them. So that was a good day also. The next place we visited was called the 9 Miles Church of Christ. This name reminded me so much of living in Alabama because they named it because it was 9 miles from the city. You know, so it's the 9 Miles Church. Of all of the churches we visited, this was probably the most lethargic, seeming the most uninterested in what we had to say. By about 20 minutes into it, I mean, there were already a number of people nodding off asleep. So I don't know if that was just the day or the status of the village or what, but I kind of thought that picture captured the feeling of what the day was like. There was a time, though, that the village did kind of come to life, at least the women did. And that's when a lesson book was brought out. And I'm going to talk more about that here in just a minute. But I've got a picture up there of Hallie. And if you notice, she's holding that book. And she and Pam said, as soon as they brought that out, that the women's attention suddenly picked, and they were very into the class then. The lady that you see by Hallie there is a lady by the name of Valenti. She is a member of the Area 47 Church. She is a city girl through and through. She was very different from the people in the villages, but good translator. Karen was not able to come back after those first few days, so Valenti took over, and she did several days, traveling with us to various times. So we were, especially the ladies, were glad to have her along. I'm not even going to try to pronounce the next village name here. This was an interesting day for a couple of reasons. This man is named Numbers, and he translated for me 2 years ago. And I thought he did a pretty decent job when he did that. It's interesting that the people who speak English really want to translate. And so he really wanted to translate this day, and so he did for Larry, and it was painful. He had great amount of difficulty in that, and I could sense Larry's frustration with that, though he was very calm about it. But anyway, he wanted to get that message across. Larry got a different translator for the next sermon, and fortunately, I did too. A lot of kids at this particular village. In total, there were about 350 that were present. Like the earlier days, there were several churches represented. If there is an event going on in a church, typically you're going to have several villages that'll be represented there. And that was the case here. As I mentioned, a lot of kids, you can see, this is me trying to teach them the fine art of a high five there. And, you know, they participated in the studies. Usually the boys will go with the men and will sit there very respectfully during the studies. The girls will go with the women. This particular day, though, had a tragic turn to it. As we were teaching, we learned that one of the ladies who was in attendance, that her husband had been struck and killed by a car. And likely he was on his way to the study when that happened. And that was, I'll just say, a major dose of reality for all of us. Every time I'm there, I'm thinking, how do people not get killed because of the constant number of pedestrians on the road, bicycles on the road, oxen-drawn carts on the road, and then cars speeding through. And this day, we learned that that does happen. And so sadly, she lost her husband. But I want to say this, as is always the case, there will be people here who, as I'm leaving on the Sunday before we depart for the trip, will hand me money and say, use this for whatever you want to, whatever you need on the trip. And we're always so appreciative of that. So I took some of that money that was given to me, and I gave it to this lady for funeral expenses. So some of you were able to relieve a burden on her that would have been very hard. I asked Moses what the average funeral would cost, and he said probably around $200, and said that what they do is in the village, the Christians will just contribute. They'll just take up a collection to get as much as they can to pay for the funeral expenses. So your generosity helped out with that to allow her to have that burden relieved from her. I would say he was in his, I think, probably late 40s, early 50s, had teenage kids at home, so it'll be a struggle for that family. Anyway, that aside, the message was received very positively. Numbers had been working to get Larry to his village since we met 2 years ago, and so we were able to do that, and I think the message was very well received. By the time we make it to the weekend, a meeting had been scheduled at this particular church, the Kimwendo Church. And if you notice there, that building looks quite different from the others, doesn't it? The reason for that is there is an American couple who chooses to remain anonymous, not of this congregation, but fairly nearby. And they have talked to Larry about donating funds for a building to be constructed. And Larry felt like that this particular church would be good stewards of that, and that this would be a good location, very growing area. And so he got them together, building this totally under the auspices of the elders of this church, him advising and providing the expertise needed for that. I don't know if you remember this or not, but last year we were invited to the groundbreaking for this church. No idea why, but they wanted us there. And so we all got to break the ground for this congregation. And so this building has been constructed over the last year. It will accommodate about 1,200 people. It is, I think they said now, the largest church building in the central region. And this congregation's already about 540 people. So very quickly growing, and I expect that they will fill that building before too long. Any case, they wanted us to come back. This is like the first official kickoff in their new building. So they planned a gospel meeting for us there. And they were expecting to fill the building. About 1,200 people is what they were anticipating for that. To everyone's surprise, 4,000 people showed up for this event. And so I've got a picture there from Saturday night. You can see all of the people. The speaker was right here. You can see him. That's kind of where he was set up. And you talk about one of the most stressful nights. It was this one. With that many people coming in, you know, again, the church was not prepared for that size number. They had gone ahead and set tents up, anticipating it might spill over, but no concept that it'd be this many. People came in from not only Malawi, but Zambia is just a few miles away. And, of course, Mozambique is very close by. So three different countries, four if you count the United States, were represented there. And it was pure chaos the first night. They were trying to get a speaker system going, and I spoke two times on that Saturday night. The first night, first sermon, the speaker system squealed the entire time. I don't know, five or six times, men were coming up, taking the mic away, readjusting the mic, all that going on. Right beside me was a group of about 20 kids that were playing, and what happens as they come to a gospel meeting like this, a village will rent someone's truck to drive them. And so they'll have a flatbed truck, and it may be 50 people on the back of it standing, literally hanging off. But they come in singing hymns. And so you hear the hymns coming. So if you can imagine preaching with a squealing sound system, people changing your mics, kids having a lot of fun right beside you, and singing truckloads of people coming the whole time. You can feel for that. I started to quit, but then I said, you know what? This is really good practice for keeping my attention on something. So I finished it up. By the second sermon, things had kind of settled down a bit, and the sound system completely died. So I don't know how many people heard the second sermon, but those in the tents were able to hear. Anyway, good problem to have. These are a few more pictures. This is the ladies' class. They met inside the building. Probably 1,200 ladies were assembled there. Pam said it went as well as my first sermon went. A lot of talking. Of course, a lot of these people had not seen each other in a long time. A lot of visiting going on. But anyway, we gave it our best shot. Probably the best group of the day were the kids. Pam and Hallie both said the kids paid very good attention. I'm guessing probably at least 300 kids. And that was not nearly all of them. But 300 kids gathered there for that class. When I finished, I preached one more sermon on Sunday morning, total of three, two Saturday night, one Sunday morning. Larry also preached Sunday morning. And I sat down just exhausted from the weekend and kind of kicked my feet back and thought, I'm done. And someone came over and said, you need to come say a few words to present the building to the church. It's like, what am I supposed to say? I had nothing to do with donating the money or whatever, so I came up with, I'm sure, some wonderful speech in the 15 seconds walking across there to it. But anyway, this is, of course, Moses, who's translating. This is one of the elders, so I just encourage them that this was a great blessing they had, to use it to the glory of God, to use it in the way He intended. And then the elder responded with a speech. So it was okay, but a little unexpected there. That was, though, a very interesting weekend in just a lot of ways. You know, to see that many people who are interested in the gospel. We're excited when we can get 300 people for a gospel meeting. And yet here you've got people who are packing their bags. They're going to spend the night outside. All night long, they sing, they pray, they listen to sermons. Probably explains why it was so much calmer Sunday morning. They're about worn out from all of that. But nonetheless, it's just a real spiritually filled weekend and in very uncomfortable situations. But yet, there's a great willingness to do that. So that was a very, very big thing. I think Larry was encouraged by that and, again, very hopeful for the church in that area that they can use this building effectively. There were 4 baptisms as a result of this meeting. So in total, we had 5 people that we know of who were baptized. This new building does have a baptistry in it. It's built into the floor. Unfortunately, they had not been able to fill it up yet, so I understand they took them to a nearby body of water to baptize them. And it wouldn't surprise me if there were more than that. Those are the ones who came forward during the invitation. So very, very good weekend. On our final 2 days, we visited the San Dalamu Church. This, again, very, very rural, out seemingly in the middle of nowhere, yet 250 people came. Again, a lot of women, a lot of kids were there, so Pam and Hallie were able to have a good class with them. That's what's pictured there. I think several of the places they wanted to learn an English song, so they would teach them God is so good, and we've got a video of them singing that, and it's very encouraging. I'm sure Pam would be glad to share that with you. Any case, good day there. And then on our final day, we went to the Musundwi Church. This was actually in La Longue, shortest distance of any of the churches we visited, about 45 minutes from where we were staying. Also the smallest, about 80 people present, but somewhat unusually, a lot of teenagers were present. And had I known that, we would have changed the order of the day and I would have got those boys for a session. But anyway, they paid very close attention in the men's study. And just a sweet group. They were just so welcoming to us. And it was a good way to end our time in Malawi. I want to talk to you just a minute about what you see the people holding here. You see 4 people who are kind of holding up these books. And a little bit closer up of that is this book that's kind of the mastermind. Pam put it together, where there's several lessons that, depending on how long she has with the ladies and kids, she'll use this book. They're kind of divided up. So if you just got a short time, you can do 1 lesson or more if you have plenty of time. But this is very much a product of this congregation. Julie Estes was just essential in helping get this together. And Stephen Miller was essential in getting the artwork done. One of the things that Bible storybooks have in common is they make everyone look either American or Western European. And so you think about a child who may have never seen someone with white skin. And, you know, here's this book. It's going to be really hard to relate to. So what we wanted was something that would be relatable. And, you know, I mentioned earlier the 9 Miles Church. This is when they really perked up, when they saw these pictures, when they heard the story. And so it's designed kind of like a chart where you can set it up, audience can see the picture. And then on the back of it, you've got the storyline in the Chichewan language and then the English cheat sheet over here. And so you've got the storyline that's represented by the pictures. This was an overwhelming success. These ended up being about $20 to print a piece. And the reason that price was a little high was because we put it on paper that's virtually indestructible. You can try to rip it and it won't. because we knew that it was going to face some pretty harsh conditions. We could have given away, I would say, a minimum of 20 of these at every stop that we made. We didn't have that many by any means. So what we tried to do was to leave it with a representative of the church. So if there was an elder there, we would give it to that elder. Here are some of the different ones that we gave it to. This is a lady by the name of Angus. We met her 2 years ago. She translated for Pam, just a really sweet lady, very friendly, outgoing. She was at one of the villages where we did some teaching. So Pam gave it to her. I feel very confident that she's going to put it to good use. And this is Valenti again, one of our interpreters. She was taking that one back to Area 47. And then I forget, this may have been at the gospel meeting. Looks like maybe that's the building. Anyway, we just wanted the elders to have a copy of this so that they could use it at their church. Now, we'd really like to get some feedback from them, whether these are actually used or not. If they are, then it's a worthwhile endeavor to invest some money into this. Pam was talking to Ida Combi, Moses' wife, and she asked her, "Do you have any kids' material in Chichewa?" And she said, "Nothing. We don't have anything." So they're very interested in getting this kind of material there. And we've tried to carry some things over, especially for use with the ladies and also for the kids. And so if we can get some positive feedback on this, we'll certainly want to get some more of these over there. I asked Pam to bring her copy tonight, so if you'd like to see that, she's got it, and she'd be glad to show that to you. Let me mention one other thing before I conclude. Last year, if you'll recall, there was a typhoon that kind of sat down on top of Malawi. It went through creating some damage, but then it kind of circled back around and the rains just sat down on southern Malawi. And you may remember some of the videos that Larry sent of that with people just facing total destruction. And so a call went out for Americans to help with that, and this congregation, as well as I think maybe two or three other churches and just a plethora of individual Christians met the need. About $150,000 was raised for that. And that was used primarily to purchase corn, big sacks of corn that every household has just for the basics. Also, some of that money was used for living expenses for displaced Christians. The government did provide some. There were a couple of foreign countries that sent in tents and temporary shelters for people. But for displaced Christians or churches that had lost all of their Bibles, things like that, some of that money went for that. I want to share with you something you need to know about that. Meticulous records were kept far above and beyond what most of us would expect. You know, I trust Larry 100%. But I was very intrigued by a statement Moses wanted me to bring back to you. He said, "You need to tell the church this, that Lazarus and I have known a number of missionaries, but none of them have ever been as transparent as Larry." He'll say, "This money is not my money. It's the Lord's money. It's going to be used in the right way." And while all of us, I think, would trust Larry 100%, to hear that, I think, is very helpful to know that this money's not getting lost. You know, it's not being used in inappropriate ways. It's going 100% for those relief efforts. Larry is obsessive about making sure that every penny is accounted for, which I so appreciate. He has asked a man by the name of Pius Kasimba, who is a CPA, also a member of the Area 47 Church, to oversee all of that. So it is just like what you would do with business records. And I met Pius on this trip. I had not met him before. He seems like a very good man. And a report is going to come out soon from Larry on all this. I've seen a little bit of it. He's detailed it. He's shown how the money's spent. He's got pictures of the corn being delivered. So that money was well used. Larry made sure there were many hands on board with this, many witnesses to how the money was being distributed. Moses, of course, very much into that. Shad Neondo is instrumental for buying, delivering the corn. Lazarus also. And then another man who's kind of come on board, in a sense, with Larry's group, Eliam Kasambara. I met him on this trip, too. So lots of witnesses, lots of people keeping up with the records. And so that money has been used in a very good way. And I say all of that to say they are now sitting on top of another disaster. It has been a 1-2 punch for Southern Africa. Last year they had Typhoon Freddy came in, destroyed a lot. Now they're having the opposite problem. And that is, for this past rainy seasons, the rains didn't come. El Nino has kind of sat down on top of that region. I heard Shad talking about a little bit of property where he farms. Moses, Lazarus, they all have a few acres. And all of them talking about how the harvest is far, far less than normal. So what that's going to mean is in December, food is going to be in very, very short supply there. Right now, you know, with the harvest coming in, they're doing okay. But as that begins to be used up, there's not going to be enough. There have been a couple of international efforts in this already. I think a nation or two has committed to help during this time. I was able to have dinner, Pam and I were, on this final night with the whole group. Pius was there, Eliam was there. And so I just asked them, I said, okay, give me a ballpark figure to keep the Christians of Malawi fed through the famine. How much are we talking about? And neither of them really wanted to answer that question. And so I didn't press it. But this dinner went on for a while. And after it was over, they came up to me and said, we've been talking. And we've decided that it would be an understatement to say that it's going to take double to feed people now as to what it took because of the destruction of Typhoon Freddy. And so that means a minimum of $300,000 are going to have to be raised to keep even minimal food coming in to the Christians there. Mr. Onions, who is Larry's landlord, not a Christian, heard some of the discussion and he said, you realize that's just talking about corn, right? That's not talking about all the other things. And that's right. The United States and American Christians cannot solve the poverty problem of Africa. It's just an impossible thing. But when these occasions do come up, there is that opportunity to help brethren who are in need. And I suspect this most closely aligns with what we find Paul writing to the Corinthians about as anything. Other Christians in different areas who are hungry and sending efforts to that. So I think we have been called again to help in this. I don't know that 300,000 is an achievable number. I didn't know if 150,000 was an achievable number. I was surprised. I think by about 3 weeks into it, that number had been raised. We're talking double that, though. But I give this to you because several in this congregation will say to me, let us know when you hear what the needs are in Malawi. Well, this is one of them. This is a big one. And the hope is that enough money will come in soon so that they can go ahead and buy up this corn at a fairly cheaper rate. By the time it gets to December, it'll be at least double what it costs now. So I told Larry I would make that known to the congregation here. I also plan to send out a letter that explains this a little more, with a little more detail. And I've written that up so that if you are of a mind to do so and you know other Christians who would be interested in helping, you can send that on out. I've talked to all the people mentioned in the letter. They're all good with their names being used. Anyone who wants to talk to Larry or to Moses or to Stephen Cook or to myself, you're welcome to do that. And Larry added, anybody who wants to come over to help deliver the relief, that you are welcome to come over and to help with that effort. So that invitation has gone out to you. I'm just going to say, this is on top of all of the other needs. Every village you go to, Do you have Bibles? Can you give us Bibles? We don't have any. In fact, the first village that we went to, they said, if you can just get them to us at a subsidized price, we'll pay what we can if you'll just cover the rest. At the gospel meeting, there was a man, I think, that had come across the border from Zambia. And he said, the denominations got together and they burned our building down. And the chief is not going to let us rebuild. We're going to have to find somewhere else. And he was not really asking for any help other than, he says, if you have any Bibles, we would love to have them. That's the kind of needs that are going on. Every church is asking for help. We need a new roof for our building. Or congregation sees something like at the Machinji Village. Can you get us a building like that? And I told Larry, I said, I don't know how you do that. I don't know how you listen to this every day, because it would just tear me up to hear these people coming who are in such poverty but not asking for anything we would consider a luxury. I bet most of us have, what, 5 Bibles in our house? We just take that for granted. If we lose our Bible, we can buy one at a very cheap price. Bibles, songbooks, meeting places, all of these things are essential. But here we're talking about a matter of life and death. And that's what this first village said. As the elder was thanking us for what we had done, he said, we're strong farmers here. We're not lazy. He said, but at the way things are looking right now, there'll be people in this church who will die from this famine. And so it's very much a matter of give us this day our daily bread. As I was working on this morning's sermon on worry, I did a search and said, which nation worries the most? I was so expecting the United States to come up. It was Malawi, was in the top 3. And whatever group had done this, they said, what they worry the most about is the weather. We can understand that, can't we? Of what they faced the past 2 years, we can see why that's a source of worry. So, that is something that we can think about. I am certainly not going to tell you to be more generous, because I couldn't even if I wanted to. The generosity of this church has just been exceptional, especially for this work in Malawi. And we're known as Hughes Road there. I tried to explain to Moses the whole story of the name. But anyway, the Hughes Road Church is known in Malawi in a very good way because of the willingness of Christians here, A, to send Larry over, and then B, to help with all of these different catastrophes that come up. So what we find is a situation that's going to be difficult, but at the very most, what we can do is pray for these brethren. Make sure we remember them in our prayers. But if you're of a mind to help and you need more information on that, you can see me or you can read this letter that I'll send out in the next few days. So anyway, that is our trip. I'm always glad if you've got questions about it, anything you want to ask, I'm glad to answer that. So just let me know. Several people, when I told them about the 4,000 coming, they said, did you feed them? Which is, you know, the obvious Bible joke that you're going to make for a number that size. And I say, well, as a matter of fact, yes, they were fed at the generosity of Larry and others. But there was a bigger feast going on that day. And I couldn't help but think about Acts chapter 2. Do you imagine that the day of Pentecost was also a chaotic day? That here was a day when this huge crowd was in town, and here is this preaching that's going on. And one of those ragtag apostles stands up and he says, you killed the Son of God, oh, by the way. And they turn to him and they say, what do we do about it? And in Acts 2:38, it says, Peter spoke to them, and he said, repent and be baptized, every one of you, in the name of Jesus Christ for the forgiveness of sins. And you'll receive the gift of the Holy Spirit. And just a few verses down, verse 41, it says, there were added that day about 3,000 souls. Because of the food, not of a physical sense, but of the spiritual that was being presented. 4 people heard that message, and they were baptized. Four people were added to the body of Christ that day, and perhaps others that we don't know about. We're 2,000 years past this point in Acts 2, but isn't it amazing that the gospel message continues to be attractive to people? We oftentimes lament and we say, oh, times are terrible. People don't listen to the Bible. Look at all these people leaving. And it's such an American-centric attitude that we look at our little area of the world and we say, oh, things are just in a disastrous state. But yet you look throughout the globe, and when you get into Africa, Asia, there is such interest in the gospel right now. And so I think the money that we are investing there is doing much good of allowing people to hear that gospel message. But the same message that applies there applies here. And it may be that you've heard this and it's kind of piqued your interest. And you've thought about that message that encouraged these people 7,000 miles away to give their lives to the Lord. And maybe that message is piquing your interest. And so I hope that even this evening, that if you know what it means to become a Christian, that you'll do so, that you'll not put it off. I hope that you'll make that decision that at least five people made in the last 3 weeks, so that one day you can be with them eternally. Sometimes when I preach, I'll tell the people how upsetting the Tower of Babel is. And it's because of them I have to use a translator. But won't it be great one day that we'll all be together and we'll all be speaking the same language? There'll be no barriers there. I want to be a part of that number. I want to be a part of that people who are gathered at the throne of God, who have had very different experiences in this life, but are drawn and attracted by the love of Jesus Christ to give His life for us. And I hope tonight, if that message is appealing to you, that you'll make the decision to do that, that your name can be added to that book of life. If you need to respond, you can come now as we stand and sing together.
Thanks again for joining us today. If you have questions about anything you heard today or anything Bible related, you can use the contact form on our website at teachingtruth.org to submit a question and someone will be in touch. There's also lots of other great Bible content on our site as well. The web address again is teachingtruth.org. Once again, thanks for listening, and we hope to see you in person soon.